And welcome, everyone, to the Virtual Court of Appeals. This is our second of three oral hearings that we have this morning, December 17. Judges Gaitis and Rodenberg are joining me. Judge Sleater, I'll be presiding this morning. This next matter that we have on our docket is file A200919, Stephen Schussler et al. Are the appellants, City of Village of Minnetonka Beach, as well as Lake Minnetonka Conservation District. And I believe two board members are listed as well for respondents. And I understand that we have two respondents, counsel, one for each of the two primary respondents. And I understand you'll be splitting time. Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And our procedure otherwise, then we're looking at each other in boxes, is the same as you would if we were all live in the traditional way. 15 minutes for appellant's counsel, a total of 15 minutes for the two parties' respondent's counsel, and then 5 minutes of rebuttal for appellant's counsel. We do ask counsel to identify yourself for our record. We are recording these proceedings in the usual way. And I'll note also for all participants that any other recording is strictly prohibited. The recording will be available on the Judicial Branch website within the next 24 hours. And hopefully all of you can see right now a white box where it says Marshall, and with some small numbers that will be enlarged. Now that'll be your time clock, so you should be able to see that. If at any time we do lose hearing you, especially have some technological issues, so the Marshall will stop the clock until we can resurrect our connection. And so with that, I think we are ready to proceed. And counsel for appellant, you may identify yourself and may proceed. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is James H. Gilbert. I represent the appellants, Stephen and Sonny Ryan Schussler. They are also attending here and listening in by Zoom. We're respectfully asking this court to reverse the district court granting of summary judgment on the plaintiff's entire claim. We think there were a number of errors of law that occurred here relating to interpreting the plat property, misapplying, interpreting the law relating to interpreting ordinances. There were also numerous disputed material factual issues that were decided by the court. And there are other issues too, including the loss of claim grandfathering rights. If I could start out by saying there's two big picture issues I'd like to set the framework here. The appellants brought this lawsuit not to expand their riparian rights, but just to obtain them. Notwithstanding the fact that the district court found the point of navigability on the lake was at 5 feet, and our clients did not have a dock there, they were not allowed to install a dock to the navigable point on Lake Minnetonka pursuant to Minnesota law. We brought this lawsuit too only after I personally appeared 5 times at public meetings, asking both the LMCD and the city to hear us out, to have some transparency in this process and address the merits, and that just simply never occurred. The appellants simply wanted to install a dock at their home to the point of navigability pursuant to longstanding law. And the point of navigability is not in dispute in this case. The court determined that it's 5 feet of depth. Nobody's appealed that, and that's standard. And the law that's been cited by everybody is also not in dispute. The problem is the proper law was not applied to these fact situations.
Mr. Gilbert, can I have you just explain for me, and I appreciated all the parties, the pictures and the numerous documents, but so I have it firmly in my head, a vision of it. Do I understand that the primary factual basis for interference with your client's riparian rights is that if they were to extend their dock, given the reverse pie shape, as I understand the description everyone's using, out to the 5 feet of navigability, that crosses right now the location that, or generally has been the location of the public dock, well, public slash private, I know there's arguments about that, because of the direction that crosses over. In effect, is that, in a nutshell, the interference factually that your clients have raised?
That's basically true, Your Honor. And the point of navigability is 185 feet out from the shore. This is an extremely shallow area of the Lake Minnetonka. And the court pointed out there's 4 or 5 abnormalities with this section here. But that is the physical problem here, because With the intersecting lot lines, dock site that the city operates and ours will irrevocably conflict with each other.
And is it my understanding then the main dispute legally was the McClafferty decision? The court seemed to rely on it, and respondents spend a fair amount of time talking about it. Your client disputes the applicability of that case as a basis to suggest that the respondents' riparian rights exceed those of your client. Have I said that correctly? And in a nutshell, why? What is it about McClafferty that you think does not say what they are suggesting it does as to that interference?
Well, McClafferty, I don't think, addressed the issue. We have a plat here that has a restriction. It's supposed to be used just for the public, not for the private. McClafferty case doesn't even talk about, you know, what kind of easement rights there were there. The holding in McClafferty says these rights should be shared. And in this case, there's been absolutely no sharing of these rights. It's undisputed that my clients are the fee owners of this entire fire lane. And by the way, this is the record calls it a fire lane, but it's never been used as a fire lane. It's a street. It's a public street that part of it, you know, has been vacated there. But so we do not think that McClafferty even comes close to addressing that issue there. And in McClafferty too, they didn't have that consent issue requirement as the LMCD code does. The LMCD code added another, you know, layer of decision-making, if you will, for the fee owner, and that was not present in the McClafferty case either. We agree that there's got to be a sharing of riparian rights out in the water once you get out there, but McClafferty doesn't even, you know, address those issues.
If I could just ask a follow-up question there. McClafferty cites to Johnson v. Seifert. That's the way we pronounce it in New Ulm. I don't know if it's Seifert or Seifert, but it seems like I'm troubled by the possibility that there may be an unresolved factual question, and that is, what are the reasonable uses to which your clients, appellants, can put their riparian rights in light of the 185-foot city dock?
You know, that's true, Your Honor. And if that can't be resolved, that becomes a matter for a court to determine or a jury under the facts, you know. Both parties have riparian rights, and each one can use them as long as they don't unreasonably interfere with the others. So it might just come down to a fact question relating to that.
Do you think Johnson applies here?
In what regard?
Johnson is factually different. There's like meandered properties and lakes that aren't navigable and a bunch of other stuff. Does the rule of Johnson regarding reasonable use of riparian rights apply here?
Yeah, sure. That rule has been present in every case, you know, the Flynn case and Sanborn case, and virtually every case that has addressed it, you know, has talked in those terms. And McClafferty, you know, the finding was these rights have to be shared. And where there's an irrevocable conflict here, and there is, assuming, you know, there's some other legal issues that might impact, you know, the ability and the length of the city's dock, which I want to address too. But I think our case law has been consistent in announcing that principle of law without exception. If I can comment on another, and whatever questions you have too is fine, but one other big picture issue we're involved here, I'd like to quote, we took the deposition of the city manager, Ms. Griffin, about the policy of the city here, what they're really trying to accomplish here. And this is an overriding factor that really created this problem here. She stated under oath, there is a general sentiment today to try and keep the city from having more public access for people that are not residents. And we quote that on page 17 of our reply brief. And then in 1980, the city also vacated approximately 6,000 feet of shoreline, basically, and this is in the city minutes, to prevent Hennepin County from using publicly dedicated land for public access. We think this dock is illegal. We think it violates the plat. The plat is a statutory plat. It's dedicated to the public. And they basically converted the public dedication to, I'm going to call it a private country club enclave for four of their non-riparian residents to use it to the exclusion of the public. And these riparian rights are the main value of this property. I mean, all the cases have said that. You know, that's the main issue involved here. And they have no legal authority to violate that plat provision. And we would ask this court as a matter of law to reverse that and say, this is not an appropriate use. They can have another dock there, but this dock, the way they have constructed it and used it, is illegal.
And Mr. Gilbert, on that point, just to clarify, is that because factually, or at least it's undisputed, that it's limited to the four permittees? So is it your client's belief that that's the error? But I believe there was some responses that there's public's not precluded from using that access point or otherwise. I don't know about the dock itself, but do you believe there's genuine issues of fact with regard to whether that grant has been complied with?
I think on this record, there's no evidence of other use during the 9 months where these docks are there. The docks basically encompass the entire area, these straight line, let me call it imaginary straight lines that the LMTD has created here for this dock situation.
What is the width of the easement?
It's 30 feet wide.
The dock isn't 30 feet wide, is it?
No, there's setback requirements, that have been applied to, but when you put the dock in there, plus they have four boats, two on each side, it basically...
They're way out, aren't they?
The dock was out 158 feet.
Total. Right. But what would, the way I understand the configuration, what would stop members of the public, if anything, from going with a kayak there or walking in there? It's not very deep, and so you couldn't launch much of a boat there, but perhaps a kayak or canoe or paddleboard. Seems like there is enough room there that the public could use it for access to the water. Even while the dock exists,
I don't think access to the water is the proper legal description, Your Honor. It's to the point of navigability, which is way out in the lake there. And we're saying, as adjacent property owners, as fee owners, and under the LMCD code, they need our consent. And for this dock, they don't have our consent.
What about the argument that respondent is making concerning the relationship between the common law of riparian rights and the city ordinance at issue here? It seems to me that your argument is that an ordinance can always trump the common law, and their argument is the opposite. Can you address your position a little more there?
Well, they've cited no case that indicates that. The cases they cited deal with statutory, preemption. And the one case they cited dealt with the building code, the state building code preempts local ordinances here. But there's no case in Minnesota jurisprudence, as far as I know, that says ordinances cannot alter the common law. In fact, these city ordinances always alter the common law because they do affect property rights and use and things like that. So there's no basis for that argument that they're making there.
Do I understand on that point, Mr. Gilbert, your client argues alternatively, even if it was a misinterpretation of common law in any event, because that brings us back to the riparian rights, public versus private issues?
It does. And it's broader than that on a big picture issue. The city holds this property in trust for the benefit of the public. And that's pursuant to statute 501.01. And that creates a high fiduciary level there of responsibility. And they've basically hijacked this right, if you will, to the exclusion. And let me say, to the discrimination of people that don't live in their city, that they cannot use, this public access point, which is a road. And I think this court has to be mindful too of the overall impact of a decision that's saying, wait a minute, we've got 10,000 lakes in Minnesota. We have a lot of roads. Are you going to say that all these cities can say, no, the general public can't use these roads to access the lakes anymore, but they can preserve it just for their cities? And there's been no precedent for that kind of overreaching, let me call it abuse of power, that has occurred in this situation. And the city acts if it's theirs, and that's where the trial court erred too. The trial court mentioned a number of times is dedicated to the city. This property is not dedicated to the city. It's dedicated to the public. And under statutory dedication interpretations here, they cannot convert that. The only case they cite in support of this is the permit from the Boland case up in Duluth. And that's a totally different case too, because in that case, somebody wanted to just add some gravel to a public road to make it more passable, to make it open for the public. But it didn't hijack the use, and it didn't rent the use out or restrict the general public from going there. In matter of fact, adding that gravel there increased access and increased, you know, transportation to and from that street. And that's the only case that they're saying that they're, you know, there's a private permit requirement here. There's no private permit requirement for use of a public access. It's allowed under Minnesota law, as far as I'm concerned, that we have seen anyway. They also ignore this consent requirement of the LMCD. I find it very peculiar, if not unprecedented, that the LMCD will come to this court and ask you to declare one of their ordinances that they adopted in 2019 to be invalid. I don't even know if they have standing to ask that of this court. And the trial court did not follow the three-step process in Frank's Nursery case in analyzing ordinances. If it's, you know, the Minnesota law is if ordinances are presumed valid and they're only set aside by the courts if their invalidity is clear. And that's been settled law in Minnesota for 100 years. And it's undisputed that they do not have the consent of the Schusslers here, the appellants, to use this property as it is. And the LMCD has also been arbitrary and capricious in applying this consent. They're saying they can use the consent to deny the Schusslers use of that. The two properties adjacent, the one on the north, the one on the south, you know, they need a consent to have the prior docks used in this area here. But they're going to just ignore the plain import of their statute. And I don't know what rule of law this court would announce and say, and this was just passed in 2019, by the way, in specific response to some of the prior applications of the Schusslers to obtain, you know, a variance here. And we ask for the strict enforcement of that. They don't have the consent and they have no legal basis to ignore it. And neither does the city. That's a voting member that actively partook and approved, you know, the addition of this consent requirement in the LMCD. And under that Birchwood case involving White Bear Lake, which has a very similar statute to Minnetonka, they have, am I losing track of my time here?
You did. Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. Yeah, you exceeded it by a minute or two.
I'm sorry. I didn't see that. This is new to me. It's the first time I've done this. Sure. I apologize.
It's relatively new to all of us, and actually, when it's working, it's a distant second best to being in person, that's for sure. But you'll have 5 minutes on rebuttal, of course. And so now we'll turn to counsel for respondent, whichever, and I understand you're splitting your time equally, so whichever intending to proceed first, you may identify yourself and begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Paul Reavers, and I represent the respondent, the city of Village, of the Village of Minnetonka Beach. And we ask that this court affirm the district court across the board. And the city has a long history here of regulating docks dating back to 1915. And the idea here is to give access to the lake for the public. And there's no dispute, the fire lane was dedicated to the public. The city holds it in trust and effectively manages that.
And Mr. Reavers, can I just, since you started out with 1915, isn't the critical date really the 1889 grant? And what part of the grant gives the city authority to limit a dock to four private citizens?
Well, the city has the authority to regulate docks. So the dedication language was a general grant. There was no specific qualified or limited notion there. And keep in mind, the fire lane still provides, is open to the public. People can still access the lake. The question is whether the city can license a dock off that public access. And we cite the court to, three things. Number one, Minnesota statute 412.221 specifically provides by ordinance, the city can regulate the location, construction, and use of docks. Second, the city charter authorizes the city to manage the streets and public areas. And third, I would point the court to the Bolin v. Glass court case that the district court cited as well, that there's no prohibition from a municipality to permit private improvements here.
And again, just to clarify, Mr. Reavers, isn't the unique nature of this is it is limited to the words in the grant, as I understand, and the grant was fairly specific that it's limited to the purposes therein. And so my question is, if I pull my boat up to that dock and dock it in one of those private slips, I assume I would get some sort of a ticket or violation. So unless you're one of the four who could actually use the dock to navigate, it's the only way to navigate because of the shallowness of it, there'd be no other than as Judge Rodenberg referenced, a canoe or a kayak, I suppose. And I guess the question raised here for us, is there not at least a fact dispute as to whether the city has allowed full use of that property to the public?
The short answer is no, Your Honor. The whole fire lane is open to the public. Folks can still access the water. The only thing that the city regulates separately is that dock. This is no different. If the city would have constructed a dock, I don't think that my colleague, Mr. Gilbert, would argue the city couldn't construct a dock there. But if this here, we're just, as opposed to the city spending the money to put it in, they're licensing these docks and folks are putting those docks in for that limited use. But during the rest of the year, it's open. And again, you could put a small boat, canoe, kayak, not a large boat, but you could beach a boat there. There's nothing prohibiting that. So it is open to the public. It is able to be used by the public and there's no exclusion. So the fact that these four individuals have permits from the city, it's not an exclusive use of the fire lane. That's where I think if the city had said, no one can utilize the fire lane except these four people, that's a different issue, but that's not what's happened here. What's happened is they're able to have a dock like many folks around the city that don't live on the lake. And that's one of the goals of the city is to ensure that its citizens have full access to the lake. And that's, we view it as consistent with the general grant in the 1889 plant. And it's also consistent with state statute and state case law there. And we believe this is a reasonable exercise of the city's authority to do that. And so, and we would also cite the court. I know there was a
question, Mr. Reavers. The setup you're describing and the setup that I see in the paperwork is altogether different than the public access docks with which I'm familiar. Generally, public access docks don't have one or more slips on them. They're places where you can back your boat in, you know, tie it to the dock until you get out, get your trailer out of the way. Those are what I think of as public access points. Where's my thinking wrong?
Well, certainly there are certainly docks like that, Your Honor, but.
Well, are there any public access docks other than this one that aren't like that?
I guess from a standpoint of here, Your Honor, I guess I can only speak to, City Dock 10, but there's nothing that prohibits the city under state law from licensing an access like this when it's still open to the public. People can still, again, access the water. They can still use the fire lane. And under those circumstances, that is consistent with the grant in the plat, and again with Minnesota case law. And with respect to the I don't know, there was a suggestion, is there a fact issue on the riparian rights here of the Schusslers? There's not. The record's clear that people have had reasonable access to the lake, to dock, to swim, to wade. People have had docks and boats docked at the Schusler property prior to their purchase of it.
Mr. Rovers, on that point, it then would you agree with appellant that if they were to build 185, construct 185 foot dock consistent with the lines that go out, they could do so even though it would crisscross over where the city had previously put its dock?
Well, I think the problem we have here is they've indicated they can't coexist. That if they get what they want, the city dock has to go away. And that's the rub here. They can they get reasonable riparian rights, not unlimited riparian rights. And the appellant's view is, I want to be able to dock as big a boat as the Polads have next door, but they simply can't do it on that pie-shaped lot. And so they have reasonable riparian rights, and they can access the water and use it, and that's what they're entitled to under the law. And I see my time is up. I want to defer to my colleague, Mr. Templin, on just the LMCD code requirements concerning consent, et cetera. Anyway, again,
Judge,
we ask.
Would you indulge one question from me?
Yes, you may, and we won't start Mr. Templin's time by he answers.
I heard in that your last little narrative, Mr. Rivers, the reasonableness come into the formula several times. Do you agree that Johnson versus Seifert is good law?
I think it's good law, Your Honor, but I think it has to be read in connection with McLafferty case, that when we're dealing with the public rights, the private rights must yield. So I think it has to be read in connection with the McLafferty case, and we would suggest the court follow the McLafferty decision as the district court did, that the private rights must yield to the public in situations like this.
I said one, Judge Sleater. Can I have one more?
You may, Judge Rodenberg.
Is reasonableness in this context something that can be decided as a matter of law?
Absolutely, Your Honor, because we know that there had the use. Here we know what the predecessors, how they've used the property, and that's in the record, that there have been boats docked there, that these folks have used the water to access it. So on this record, absolutely. And we suggest that the district court was absolutely right, that as a matter of law, they have reasonable riparian rights, and the city's use of City Dock 10 on the fire lane does not interfere with that. Thank you.
Very well. And Mr. Templin, if you identify yourself, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Justin Templin for the Lake Minnetonka Conservation District, Dennis Close, and Dan Bassin. The LMCD has a difficult job of preserving and protecting the environment and the water quality in Lake Minnetonka as a natural resource, and it has to balance the rights of the often competing and overlapping rights of various stakeholders that want to use the lake. LMCD's code, adopted pursuant to its authorizing statute, is its effort to strike that balance. I think it's important that we don't lose the thread of what's happening in this case. This is an attempt by property owners to claim for themselves far more than their reasonable allotted share of lakeshore space. They claim they are entitled to install a dock that would extend far beyond the dock use area that the LMCD authorizes for their use, and based on the size and shape of the property that they're allotted, and it would encroach into and across the entirety of the space allotted to the neighboring riparian rights holder. They make a series of arguments as to why they should be allowed to claim that space, but they are not entitled.
Actual question, Mr. Templin, on that. Is there no place and no orientation on their lot where they could reach the 5 foot navigability point without crossing into your, what you claim is the city's pre-existing use?
Right. On that point about the water depth for navigability, there's a misconception being bandied about here. The LMCD code has no specific legally established point of navigability. That is incorrect. The code does not specify 5 feet as the point of navigability in all circumstances and all situations. What it says, and you can read this for yourself in the record, 6-5.01 subdivision 3, is that property owners can obtain a variance in circumstances to wharf out to up to 5 feet of navigable depth, depending on the circumstances and where they're appropriate. I.e., the LMCD has to make a choice to balance riparian rights it can't grant to every single lakeshore owner, regardless of how shallow a bay may be, regardless of the pie-shaped nature of that owner's lot, the ability to wharf out to 5 feet without trouncing everyone else's riparian rights. That's why I started this argument by saying it, the LMCD has a difficult job. It has to balance those rights. Part of that balancing is figuring out where the appropriate space is for each property. It's done so. Each property on the lake has an authorized dock use area. They do not overlap. They don't overlap here either. The appellants can install a dock, and their predecessors in title all did this within the authorized dock use area for their property.
Mr. Templin, can I jump to the ordinance, the LMCD ordinance provision that requires sure. consent? Because as judges, we tend to want to go to the point of least resistance, and it would seem like an easy analysis for us to simply focus on that and find a court erred because it requires consent, and there's no law, at least I didn't see any law cited that the equivalent of preemption, which we know is all the law involves statutory basis, and even there it requires a legislative intent to do so to even finish the analysis. So couldn't that, what's the best argument that your client has that we should ignore your own ordinance in this case, at least with regard to the consent, but should strictly apply to the other ordinances you were just referring to?
Right. I don't think it's a situation where you have to ignore the ordinance or not, but there's two things to think about with regard to consent here. The question Mr. Gilbert raised, why are appellants required to get consent from the city for their plans, but the city's not required to get it from appellants? Well, that's a misnomer. The two situations are not even remotely comparable. City Dock 10 is contained entirely within the space between the extended property lines of the fire lane. City Dock 10 has a variance to be where it is. It's contained within those lines and it does not cross over them. As a matter of law, it doesn't obstruct anyone else's authorized dock use area. What appellants are proposing does not do that. Appellants have never proposed, in the successive proposals they've made to the LMCD, they have never proposed a dock that would remain within their authorized dock use area without crossing over into the space that's allotted for City Dock 10. In fact, they've expressly stated in depositions and in the many appearances Mr. Gilbert and his clients made before the public bodies here, essentially that's their goal, is to eliminate City Dock 10. They want to put their own dock there and elevate their own private rights ahead of the city's riparian rights. They can't do that as a matter of law. Historically, the court-
And what law in particular, Mr. Templin, so is it undisputed that both parties' riparian rights do cross over each other, so it is a matter of competing who gets to trump? And
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Your Honor, but no. Their two authorized dock use areas are adjacent to each other. They do not eclipse one another. Authorized dock use areas are drawn by LMCD code based on the extended property lines. The Schusslers bought a property that has a pie shape. Their lot lines come to a point in the lake. The fire lane is not pie-shaped. The fire lane has parallel lot lines. Its lines extend into the lake. Yes, it's narrower, but it is straight line extensions parallel to each other. 30 feet is the width of the fire lane. Because of the peculiarities of the shoreline, the width of that ADUA is actually 40 feet. But they do not cross over each other. And that's one of the misnomers that's been said
maybe,
here.
Maybe that helps. I'm the semantics. I'm not. Go ahead, Mr. Chedronberg.
The north line of the city's extension is the same line as the south line of the extension of the appellant's lot line. Is that
That's
right?
correct. That's they, correct, Your Honor. They don't cross,
they don't
each,
cross
other.
Each other. The only two lot lines that cross each other is some distance out into the lake, the north and south extensions of the lot lines of the appellant cross one another.
That's correct. Because it's a pie-shaped lot, the way they're drawn to the line, to the lakeshore line, they're going to intersect. It's a matter of geometry, which I'm terrible at, which is why I went to law school, but I can understand enough to tell you that when the parallel line, one property line versus another, it's the same line. They aren't in conflict with each other. And before I run out of time here, I do want to talk about that.
That happens if you put the, if the appellants put the dock, put a dock out that is perpendicular to the shoreline, then the extension crosses over into the fire lane extension.
Right. They had, the predecessors in title had a dock that was contained fully within the authorized dock use area, and they could extend it that way. The problem we have here is that appellants want a dock that's too big for the property they bought, and they want more boats that are have beams that are draw too much for the property that they bought. And that's the simple, unassailable fact here, is they want more than their property allows. And I see I'm out of time, and I thank the court for its understanding today.
Very well, thank you. And counsel for appellant, Mr. Gilbert, you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. The big problem here is the LMCD's rule of straight line projection. You know, the way it is, there's a triangle that comes out now from my client's property. So the property on the north has a very expansive dock use area because of the triangular portion going into the lake. The property on the south also has a very expansive dock use area because of the way this triangle comes into the water. And the LMCD has been strict. They haven't looked at it. We asked for a public hearing so these issues could be determined. Common sense, a normal procedure would say, you know what? If we didn't have these imaginary lines that in this case create a huge hardship and make it impossible, most people would just go 90 degrees out from their point on their lot rather than the triangle. And if they did that, the property on the north would go straight out. And they have a 185-foot dock, and the one north of them has a 175-foot dock, and nobody's complaining about that. My clients could have their dock. The city could go straight out too. And the property on the north end would have to, I mean, on the south, would have to move their dock and send their dock straight out. But common sense does not prevail here. I think the LMCD in denying us even a hearing on these issues.
Didn't the city dock used to go more perpendicular to the shoreline?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear the first part of your question.
Didn't the city's dock formerly extend a more perpendicular from the shoreline, and then it was moved to align with the extensions of the easement lines?
Absolutely, it was moved. Initially, it was way over to the north, and it was just off the, that's one of our exhibits in the in our addendum too. It was just off the street that was subsequently vacated. And then when that street was vacated, they shifted it back to the right because they didn't have the consent of the fee owners anymore. And that's part of the problem. And the dock was also extended from 90 feet to 100 feet, 120 to 158 feet. And they're acting like this is a municipal dock. This is not a municipal dock. We have no objection. My client have no objection to have a municipal dock there. And we've told the trial court judge that too, Your Honor, we don't object to that. We object to Dock 10. We object to the violation of the plat and the lack of consent. But we know in the public trust here under this plat, they have riparian rights, just not the ones that they're using. But it's a rule of straight line projection. And this court has criticized that before in the Canning case and one other case. It's an arbitrary application of that. When I appeared at the LMCD, I asked for a public hearing. Let's have some transparency in this. Let's see if we can come to a common sense decision. And they wouldn't do it. I went to the city too, and they allowed me to make a comment in the public section. And I asked the council members if they had any questions of me. And the mayor said, no, you can't have any questions. We're not going to discuss this. It was like a cone of silence from the two respondents here that didn't want to address the problem that now this court has to address. And I think if this court enforces the law, the plat has been violated. I think the consent requirement has to be enforced. I also think the grandfather provisions are void. You know, the LMCD, quote, granted backdated grandfather rights, even though they knew the city had submitted a letter to the LMCD in 1980 saying that these docks do not meet our standards. And to get grandfather rights, they have to they have to be legal conforming rights at the time. And on this record, it's undisputed that the city sent a letter to the LMCD and they submitted that in this proceeding saying that, we don't think it's legal, but we have no objection to it. That doesn't make it right or legal at all. So even on the grandfather provision there, it's not correct. I think the key point here for us is that our client understands that we have to share these riparian rights. We don't have to agree to Dock 10, which is a private country club exclusionary, I'm going to call it arbitrary and illegal use of riparian rights. This dock should be open to the public. And it should be, like Judge Rodenberg said, like the other public docks that are available, that's the way this should be used at the same time. So we respectfully ask that this court reverse the trial court as a matter of law, the plat violation and the consent requirement. And there might be a remand on reasonable riparian rights, which require a jury trial on what the use is actually going to be once the city comes into compliance with a municipal dock ordinances under their LMCD. I see my time's out again. Thank you very much, Your Honors, for listening today. Appreciate it.
Can I ask one more question again, Judge Thayer?
Yes, you may.
Is there a fact question as well, in your view, Mr. Gilbert, on the subject of whether the extension to 158 feet is grandfathered?
There's a huge question on that because I don't think it is. And they didn't even go.
I don't think it is, but is that at least the subject for a resolution of a factual dispute?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you to all counsel. We appreciate the answers to our questions today and in your briefing. And we will take the matter now under advisement. We wish all of you happy holidays and your families as well. And you can feel free to leave the Zoom hearing. We will have a short break before our third and final oral argument.